Welcome back to another episode of My Neighbors Are Dead. I'm your host, Adam Peacock, and we're all familiar with the big names in horror. Freddy, Jason, the underground alien base of Cabbage Town. But who we're not familiar with are the ones just outside the terror, the ones who didn't get to tell their tales, and helping me do that this week. You may know him from Superego, you may know him from his band Townland, Mr. Matt Gourley. Matt, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Adam. How are you? Oh, listen to my voice.
You sound great.
It's just, I pulled a Peter Brady.
Well, thank you for doing this, buddy. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm a fan and I'm glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about David Cronenberg's 1979 The Brood. But before we get to that, Matt, what is your relationship with horror? Do you like it? Do you hate it? Are you indifferent? Where do you stand?
Oh, I have a kind of, I think, love, hate, where love is winning over, but a complicated relationship with horror.
Okay.
Anybody that's listened to, I do a podcast with Paul Russ called With Gourley and Russ, where we talk all about horror films. That's all we do. Mm-hmm. And I had a real traumatic experience with the original Halloween when I was about four. My babysitter made me watch it with the lights out. And then, but I've dealt with that all over the place on other podcasts in my personal life.
Sure.
But my second scarred traumatic thing was The Brood. And when I saw that as a kid too, and just pieces of it. And so I was always kind of like morbidly fascinated, but also wanted to run from both of those movies. And since you guys have covered Halloween to no end on this podcast, I thought maybe The Brood is the sweet spot.
This movie's great. When was the first time you saw it that induced this scar, this everlasting scar on you?
It's the same, the sort of scourge of my existence was early cable TV, which was select TV in our house. And that's how Halloween happened when it shouldn't have. And that same how with The Brood. And I must have been, I don't know, five or six, seven, something like that. I can't remember. I just have, same thing with Halloween originally. I have the pieces that I saw of it and then the nightmares fused together. So I've created these even kind of worse, stranger versions in my head. And then when I finally see the movies, I'm kind of like, that's not so bad.
As I watched this movie, I watched it again this morning. And if anything I've learned from this, Matt, this movie is made for children. And the thing that is supposed to happen, children are supposed to see it.
It's made,
so it's made for
of
kids.
Children.
It's a kids movie. It's made of children for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. I know. It really is. It's like it has all the trappings of a kid's story, like bright colors that the kids are in, although the rest of the film's in all like rust and browns, but the kids are all bright and they're little snow rompers. It seems like a children's show. And then you see their faces.
It's terrifying. And it's the first, I would say 20 minutes. I'm trying to see where I wrote it down, Matt. I wrote, every set in this movie reminds me of my grandparents' house.
Yeah.
And with all the wood paneling and awesome couches in the grandmother's house, it reminded me so much of my own grandparents' homes, currently in the state that it's in, that I'm kind of a comfort in.
I hope you don't have those kids like hiding up in the upper ceilings of the room's corners. Yeah.
There's one of us running around, I'm sure, somewhere.
Oh, I'm with you though. And I have such a like sweet spot for that era of late mid-century architecture with the diagonal, probably cedar boards or redwood or something.
Yeah.
And then the rust colored carpets. And it's just, this movie is made to exemplify those things and demon children.
Yeah. My mom worked at a place, Dorsey Business School. She was like a whatever vocational school or whatever when she was younger. And I had been in there a few times, and that building, when Frank goes to get candy from the cops, that building with those awful giant white huge bricks.
Oh yeah.
Those chalkboards that remind me of that place and any educational institution that I had been in when I was a kid.
Oh yeah. And the preschool or kindergarten where the like most memorable thing in this movie takes place has that feeling of, I'm from Southern California and we have these mid-century public schools that are the red brick, but they're the big kind of industrial brick. They have that there, but they're like late 60s or 70s built instead of 50s built. So they have a little bit more of an architectural flair, like diagonal lines and stuff like that. And it's a weird twisting of art and architecture with like municipal infrastructure. And there's something about it that is just a sweet spot to me. But that mixed in with these horrible children in this movie really just leaves you lost and confused.
What I like about this is that, again, writing down when I took the note, we're about 46 minutes into this movie, Matt, and we still don't know if both of these storylines are going to interject with each other. I mean, I'm assuming that it's like, I can assume that it will because it's in the movie, but up until about an hour in, like, you've not explained any of this about what's happening to these people.
Yeah. I mean, you even get to the end and you haven't fully understood what psychoplasmics are.
No. No, but I want to now because it seems like Dr. Ragland was legitimately helping these people.
That's the crazy thing is you by all understanding of classical movie villains and tropes, this guy is a bad guy.
Right.
And then he's not. That's the crazy thing because you think, first of all, he's a huge huckster, like he's a cult leader. No, he's pulling metaphysical shit out of people for real. And then in the end realizes it's wrong and tries to help and kind of, you know, has his tragic fall. But still, it's really something.
I didn't think about it until what's his name? Mikey. Mikey, the one patient we meet at the very beginning when he's doing the demonstration.
Oh, yeah.
When they make him leave and he's begging to go back, that was the first time I thought, oh, he's doing good work. He's helping these people.
Yeah. I mean, except for the guy who ended up with little throat giblets.
That's.
If people haven't seen this movie, they've got to be going. I mean, that's more of a teaser and a tempter than anything because you'd hear like throat giblets. I gotta know what that is. I don't
you
know.
You gotta watch it. I mean, it's well worth the hour and a half. Where do you fall on Frank Carvath as a character?
Is that the dad?
That's the dad, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. In fact, that's telling that I don't even know that that's the dad because when we watched this recently for With Gorley and Rust, we felt like this character seems underdeveloped, but I can't even tell if it's the character because the actor is kind of a blank slate where everybody else is doing these amazing things. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially Oliver Reed, and I forget the woman who plays his wife. She's incredible.
Samantha Egger, or that's Egger, it. Egger, however I pronounce it.
Yeah. It's a strange kind of cipher of a performance, and I don't know if you're supposed to kind of put yourself into that. I know Cronenberg was working out some divorce issues during this thing, and it seems to be unresolved as to whether or not they're warranted these slanderous sort of things. I mean, my gut instinct is, of course, no, but apparently there's some talk out there that she was involved in a cult. Like, it's actually slightly more literal than you'd think, but I've also
ex-wife.
Yeah, and I've never been able to really find that, but I have heard some kind of talk back from our listeners saying, you know, you can't just say he's you know, like trying to defame his ex-wife. I don't know. It's getting political. This
doing
movie.
It very subtly.
Yeah.
Oh, we can do it. Let's let's defame his ex-wife.
I mean, she's having babies that are devil babies.
He seems, I think a blank slate is a very good way to put it. And again, it was distracting to me how much Art Hindle, who plays Frank Carvath, looks like Peter Dinklage and Topher Grace.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's got great hair.
He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah, he is.
Objectively a good-looking guy.
Especially the way he's dressed to kind of suit that set design of the 70s stuff, you know, he like a kind of
right
mohair coat and a scarf. Yeah, he does.
The reason I asked you about that is I wrote down a bunch of things where I was like, the first thing I wrote with a question mark is he a dick? And the more that it goes, I'm like, yes, he is a dick. And the first time that this is made clear, at least to me, and I could be way off on this, but to me, is when he's in the police station and he's going to get his daughter Candy and she's watching television in a room full of other people and he turns the TV off to get his daughter.
It's incredible entitlement. Not only that, but he's got like child psychologists on hand to help him with this traumatic situation. He's just like, get your things. We're going. We're not going to deal with this. Yeah. I wonder how much he is a stand-in for Cronenberg. I don't know, but he inadvertently may not be presenting himself well.
When he goes to see, again, another thing I wrote down that I think you might enjoy is when he goes to see that guy, Jan Hartog, in that facility to try to formulate or to form his case against Dr. Ragland.
Neck giblets.
Right. Yeah. And that sweet old lady is making her way up the stairs and he gets behind her and he's instantly mad that he has to be behind this old lady and then skirts around her with almost knocking her over.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know, I can't defend him.
I don't have kids, so I don't know what it's like to, you know, are you willing to push the elderly down to get to help your kid? I'd like to think that I would.
Yeah. I guess the elderly had their time. The kids still have a future ahead of them. It'd be better if the kid pushed down the old person and you could stay out of it and kind of
totally
plausible.
Who's going to say anything? She's super cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
The neck giblets is... neck giblets. Sorry.
We've got neck giblets, back skin tags.
I said back sacks. I wrote
back sacks is way better. Neck giblets, back sacks, exobirth lady. Are those the only three we see, I think?
I thought this is pretty conservative for him up until that very part when she rips out the back sack and just licks it clean.
Yeah, just he tears right into it with her teeth. Yeah, I think I would say too, it was pretty restrained. And then you get to that part and you're like, oh no, he was saving it up. This guy had a plan. This was the long con. Yeah.
We're sort of like gifted the foreshadowing that it's coming with the kindergarten scene. Matt, you've said this is the most important thing that happens in this movie.
Did I say important?
Is that what you said? I thought you said important.
I probably did. I probably meant memorable, but important. Memorable. Oh my God.
I'm sure you've done it a bunch, but I would just love to, if you would recant what happens in this kindergarten scene.
Yeah. So the mom has these brood children that she's birthing out of this thing called psychoplasmics, which is just physical manifestation of rage. So it manifests itself in different ways for different people. Like we said, it could be back sacks, neck giblets. For this woman, she is birthing multiple children, the titular brood, outside of her body. She has like an external placenta and all this stuff, and she rips it open with her mouth. Anyway, this whole thing is kind of a custody battle as well. So Frank is trying to get the daughter back, and it takes the daughter to preschool, and she wants the daughter. So she sends two of her brood children, which look like 5-year-old kind of Village of the Damned kid, but in head to toe snow onesies, basically, or suits, like kind of rainbow colored. And then they have these faces that I can only describe as, like, my wife sometimes will put on one of those flimsy little wet face masks that sticks to your thing, and it leaves you devoid of all expression. Or like in Red Dawn, when those Russian special forces meet them in the snow, they're wearing these white masks over their faces.
Yes.
And it
kind of
looks like that, but also with a chicken beak. It's, you know, you have to see it. Because actually, when you see the prosthetics on the faces of these kids in like a behind the scenes picture, they don't hold up to scrutiny. But in the film, they're edited around it so much that you get just enough to really scare you. So she sends two of them in, and two of these come into this kindergarten class holding hands, and they're just two kids. The teacher is, I think, the most incredible actor in the entire movie, because when kids walk in, she does like a triple or a quadruple take, and it basically unfolds. I've talked about this before, but because it's amazing. It unfolds like this. Oh, here's some of my students. Oh, those aren't my students. Oh, they've got something wrong with them. I shouldn't stare. Oh, they're going to kill me. Oh, I'm dead. Because they do. They rip her apart in front of all the other children. They beat her with, I think, a little like children's hammer from a playset.
From a little workbench thing.
Yeah, exactly. Which they really favor hammers because they kill the grandma of the little girl with a meat tenderizer in her own kitchen.
They sure do.
But the crazy thing about this is that they get these reactions from all the other kids in the class that make you think, what did they show these kids to get this reaction? Because they are frozen in terror. And Matt, there's a wide shot in the shot too. It's scary.
Again, first time watching it through, I'm sure I had a thought that you might have had her talked about. I was like, well, surely they're gonna cut away from these kids, right?
Yeah, I know.
And they don't.
No.
And they stay right on there. And even so much so that when Frank comes back, he's surrounded by the little ones, and there's just a pile of brains beneath this woman's head.
Oh my God. And then the coda to the scene is that they do take the daughter from the classroom. And the last thing you see of this kind of little section of the film is the three of them walking alone on a snowy road, and she's in the middle, and they're all holding hands, and they're just kind of bringing her home to the Psychoplasmics Institute or whatever it's called.
I think I missed the point of this, Matt, but I thought, that's really cute. I thought it was adorable watching these three children, or perceived children, walking down the street holding hands.
Wow, you have amazing empathy.
It was just adorable. I even wrote down, I was like, I think I'm missing the point. That scene, I love that scene too. Again, it just sparked that in me. The truck driving down, they stay on that truck for a while. Like, wouldn't that person driving that truck find this a bit suspicious, three little ones just wander down the street?
I would have thought that too, but then it's like late 70s. And I just remember, because I was born in 73, and around late 70s, you just were told to, like, you know, come home for dinner. But otherwise, good luck to you, you know?
Does this movie change your thoughts on snowsuits at all?
I had stuff like that because my dad used to take us skiing. So I had some of those things. Yeah, because are you from Canada?
I'm from Michigan.
Michigan, but your wife's from Canada. Okay.
Yeah, she is, yeah.
All right. And Toronto, where this takes place too, right?
Yeah, Toronto, yeah. Yeah. I was really proud of myself. I think the first exterior shot when I saw the houses, I was like, that's Canada. That's Toronto. I was very impressed that I was able to call it out.
Yeah.
Anything like this ever happened to you in kindergarten class?
Yeah, the exact same thing.
See, I didn't, so I feel like I missed out, man.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know what? Then, like we said, this is about kids and for kids. So I'm glad that it happened to you.
No parents allowed.
No. I can stay up as late as I want. Well, Matt, I mean, I wish we had more time to talk about things that we might have done, you know, when your parents weren't home, candies, shows that you might have watched late at night. But unfortunately, we have to take a break because we have a kid from that class, Matt. We have a young man by the name of Cabot Logan who's going to come by and hopefully tell us a little bit about what he saw. But if not, we'll just talk about whatever he wants to talk about.
Wow.
That's got to be a messed up thing to go through.
That's a good get. I don't know why I was on first. You should have had that kid on first because that's going to be something.
Well, Matt, please come back and we'll talk about all the stuff we missed this time around.
Anytime.
Well, Matt, thank you very much. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Hey, neighbors, Adam here, and I wanted to let you know what My Neighbors Are Dead is getting up to this summer. You have been with us as we have explored the worlds of some of your favorite horror films. Well, starting this summer, we are taking you to the northern woods of my home state, Michigan, to Camp Whitlow Lake, as we bring to you the fully original My Neighbors Are Dead Summer Camp Massacre. We're bringing back some fan favorites of the show as we try to piece together through interviews with survivors, witnesses, and with any luck, the killer Chad himself. We're going to try to piece together exactly what the hell happened up there at Camp Whitlow Lake. It starts June 22nd and it runs all summer long. That's the My Neighbors Are Dead Summer Camp Massacre. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very excited. I don't think we've ever had a guest this young on the show before. So this is going to be, like I said, just an exciting interview and just a chance to talk with somebody that we might not normally get a chance to. I'm talking to kindergartner Cabot Logan. Hi, Cabot.
Hi, mister.
How are you? How's your day going so far?
I guess it's okay considering how some of my past days have gone. This one is a bit better.
Well, you know, admittedly, Cabot, you've been through something that not a lot of kindergartners have gone through.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's not very common. My buddy Matt seems to have gone through it, but not a lot of people outside of him that I know of that's happened to. So if you're able to, Cabot, are you able to tell me what was kindergarten like for you before we're of course referring to the brutal, grisly murder of your teacher?
Yeah, that. Oh, I didn't know what way you were heading, but yeah, okay, that.
No, I'm curious, what was kindergarten like for you before your teacher was just bludgeoned to death in front of you and your classmates?
My Christ, it was sunshine. We was doing finger painting. We was eating orange wedges. And I'm sorry, excuse my language. It was fucking cakewalk. I've just been hardened since this has happened to me. And I just don't feel that I'm the same person. I curse a lot. I wish ill on people. I've gone for some hard substances. Not drugs. It's not that kind of thing. But I do drink a lot of beer.
Well, Cabot, I hope nobody's making you feel too bad about that, because I think that you're as well adjusted as you are after this is pretty remarkable.
Well, I like to think I am, but I think sometimes I'm just barely holding it together, you know?
So what was your relationship like with Mrs. Mayer? Was she a good teacher? Did you like her? Did you do fun activities with her? What was the vibe?
She was great. Had a great head on her shoulders. For instance, she knew not to date that weird guy that was the dad of Candy. What was her name?
Candy. Yeah. Candy.
Candy. God, I used to love candy, but now it doesn't do the same thing for me anymore. I need something harder. I just eat. Here's what I do. Mm-hmm. My mom packs me a lunch in a lunchbox. It's just a can of Schlitz and some beef jerky, and that's my request. And it's not even a kid's lunchbox like I used to have at Empire Strikes Back lunchbox. No, I didn't. That movie isn't even out yet. I got an advanced copy. And I says, I don't want one of those. I want one of those round top construction worker ones because I've lived the life of an adult male for all the trauma I've seen.
Is that the vibe in the whole classroom, Cabot? Are all the students thinking, hey, we're adults now. Playtime is over. This is the real world.
It's basically Deer Hunter. We're all back from NAMM. And you ain't ever seen such kids with 1,000-yard stares with just heavy, heaviness about them. We do still do finger paints, but it just kind of ends up being a... Most of the time, we're all just writing out, help.
Yeah, sure.
And half of us can't even spell. I can.
Well, one thing at a time there, Cabot, what you've been through is incredible. I'm curious, did your school offer any sort of counseling or, hey, take a couple of days off to process what happened?
Oh, yeah, they did. And all our kids, all our parents just succinctly said, no, thanks, we're out of here. They turned off the TV and took us home. The social safety net here in English Canada,
sure,
is great, but our parents, they're all so self-obsessed with their own divorces and relationships. It is the late 70s after all. Here are the three things my parents care about in order. Three, me. Two, a household with diagonal redwood and rust-colored carpets hides the blood. Lots of floral print wallpaper. That's all number two. And number one, how am I going to get custody of my child from my horrible spouse? Is this not something I should be worrying about at 5 years of age? Grade five, sorry, not fifth grade. It's Canada.
Well, I was just going to ask, when I was your age in elementary school, I really wanted to be a baseball player, and I got to hold on to that dream, even though it never happened. I didn't have it kind of taken away from me. So what are your dreams now? What are your childhood aspirations now? Because I imagine those things must have changed now that you're, drinking a construction worker's lunch.
Yeah, dreams must be nice. I've only got nightmares. I basically, all of us kids since this occurrence have been manifesting psychoplasmics.
Interesting.
Okay, yeah, I have a quarto.
And just so I'm on the same page as you, Cabot, that's something forming out of your chest, abdomen, sternum area. Is that right? A little U coming out of there?
Yeah, well, it's not exactly me. It's just this other guy who's kind of a prophetic rebellion leader, if you can believe that shit. I don't know what any of it means. I'm going over the edge, man.
Well, Cabot, I think you're doing great. And again, I admire your courage for even wanting to talk about this stuff because, it's tough. I didn't have a quarto and I had a rough time in school. I can't imagine what it's like having a quarto watching my kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Lily, she sold elephant ears at our street parade. So I can't imagine watching her get bludgeoned to death in school, what that might have done to me. I'm sorry, buddy.
That's okay. I cry probably three times a day.
Yeah, let's talk about something that makes you happy, because that's pretty brutal. So what makes you happy, Cabot? Do you like going out and, playing in the dirt or playing with your friends? What do you like doing that's fun?
It's not like anything can make me happy anymore. It's just if I could have a day absence of horror. So let's say I go to school and my teacher isn't murdered by two little just hatch-faced kids. That's a pretty good day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I imagine that's got to be a pretty good day. And that hasn't happened to you since. Is that right? Is that fair to say?
No, I don't understand. It's happened to much of anybody except for maybe me and some other guy from California.
I don't know how I would even be able to do this, but I feel like I should need to get you guys together so you could talk about this. Because that's a shared trauma. Not a lot of people get to. Confide in somebody about.
I'm out here, man. I'm 5 years old, so he's got to come to me. I mean, I guess I could get a couple of friends and just walk hand in hand down a long road to get there. That seems to be a viable rate of a route to go. I'm still learning some words.
What's your relationship like with your parents? Are you guys still close?
Not good. No, not good. Like I says, they didn't get too interested in any of my psychological evaluation. They just kind of went, come on home. We'll, I don't have time for that. Your mom's being a real you know, just a real rag, and then your dad's being just a hard ass, and oh gosh.
I'm really sorry, buddy. That is not fair, because
don't get married, man. Don't get married. I'm not. I mean, I did, but I'm not. I had a rebound right after this where I did briefly get married. I just accelerated everything.
Wait a minute. Who did you marry?
Candy.
You married Candy. You and Candy actually got together.
Yeah. And then I noticed she's got this little mole on her forearm, and it started moving around. And I was like, oh no, you're one of them. You might as well just have a little baby out your wrist.
Was this an official marriage? Is this like on record that you?
Oh yeah. It was big. And,
yeah,
we did it all. We did the whole thing. We did, we had a big ceremony at the church and then a reception up at the Psychoplasmics Institute. No one's using that anymore. And, then we went on a honeymoon to Niagara Falls.
Again, you know, Cabot, I think maybe I'm taking the wrong thing away from this, but I think it's pretty progressive, the town you live in, that would let a couple of 5-year-olds get together and form a bond of marriage.
Well, the age of consent here is 4.5. Also, when we was in Niagara Falls, I think we saw Superman.
You saw Superman in Niagara Falls?
Well, yeah, because this gal, she jumps over the side and was like taunting this guy. And he's like, she jumps into the river and he runs away. He's got glasses and all that. And then comes Superman, saves her. Isn't that crazy?
That is bananas, Cabot. And you have lived several lifetimes in just your 5 short years. And
tell me,
again,
Yeah,
looking for a silver lining here. The fact that you're as well adjusted as you are is amazing. I say that a lot on this show, but it's certainly true here.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. I guess that's a fucking silver lining. Sorry. God, I'm not proud of any of this. I don't want to be this way. You know, I'm living in a trailer.
You're living on your own.
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of exciting, right? 5 years. I mean, being on your own is kind of exciting. You can kind of do whatever you want.
I guess, but no one wants to live with me. Not my parents, not Candy. I had a dog, but it ran away.
Oh God, Kevin, this is just killing me. It's just so heartbreaking.
Yeah. I've also technically never graduated fucking kindergarten.
You know, buddy, don't let that get too much in your head, because you can always go back and make it up. You're never too old for an education.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, living on your own, it's exciting. I did it for a little while, buddy. And I'm telling you, I think if you can just get past the fact that there's nobody wanting to live with you, you're really going to enjoy it.
Great. That sounds great. Man, every corner I turn around, it's like the world just gets better. Oh, hell. Oh, hell. I'm opening up another Schlitz.
I was just going to say, I feel weird asking a 5-year-old this, but would you like to have a beer?
Yeah, and I didn't mean anything weird by like getting married young or drinking beer young. You know how they got them kids that have aging disorder where they age physically faster? I have that, but the opposite. Yeah, Jax. I'm more like a Jill, where physically, I'm a young guy. I'm just a 5-year-old. Mentally, I'm probably 48, something like that. What, veteran?
You know what? What you've gone through, Cabot, would age anybody 100 years. So I think sitting comfortably at 48 is not a bad place to be.
Wow, you really are Mr. Silver Lining. I should talk to you more. Where were you when my parents were trying to help me?
Admittedly, I probably, you know what? I don't know if I would have gotten involved, because I don't want to stick my nose into business. That's really not it. I mean, you know, if I got my nose involved in parents and their kids all the time, I'd never get out of it.
Oh, you're one of those guys, like when that Kitty Genovese got shot, nobody did anything. Just stand on by, nobody helped. Kitty Genovese, nobody cared. Shit. Christ. God damn it. Piss.
Cabot, I don't know. I got to tell you, buddy, I don't know if I would have done anything there either. I don't want to get shot.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Why don't you just put on a little snowsuit and go get a meat tenderizer?
Cabot, I'm sorry. You know what? You can have a beer. It's okay. I'm not going to tell anybody.
I know I can. That's the one thing that I've lived through this thing, is that nobody's going to tell me my business. I'll tell you that much.
See, what a great place to be. I wish I had more. I wish it was more like that. I get so scared and I don't like confrontation, but you have that confidence and that's a great thing.
Well, thanks, buddy. Maybe we should hang out sometime or something. I ain't got nothing going on.
This is going to be weird. Let's do it. Let's hang out.
Okay.
Because I feel like you could use a friend.
Oh boy, you have no idea. I ain't got no one. Ain't that something? I'm a 5-year-old kid and I ain't got no one. I'm not even like a little scamp like a Dickens urchin that you, oh, what a, you can't hold him down. No, I'm a son of a bitch. No one wants to be with me. And I don't blame them.
Admittedly, Cabot, this might be the saddest thing we've ever talked about on here. And I don't really know what to do with it because no 5-year-old should be left alone and nobody wanted, especially after what you've been through. This is just.
Yeah, that's what they don't tell you. That's what they don't tell you. When you sign up for watching your teacher get murdered by some chicken-faced kids, they don't tell you that the aftermath might be the harder thing. You'd think it'd be the initial shock. It isn't. It's the shock waves.
I think this opens the debate of who is the real victim here, you or your teacher.
Yeah. Good. Oh, I never thought of that. I could do a lot of self-victimization.
There you go.
That seems healthy. Yeah.
See, there you go. Make it about you. You're 5. You might as well do it.
I know. You can't call a 5-year-old a narcissist. They're still dependent on their parents.
They're too cute.
Candy called me a narcissist. She probably was right.
Is that what led to the end of your marriage?
Yeah. That and she cheated on me.
She did?
Yeah, with Bryce.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Cabot, buddy, maybe move to a new town. Maybe start a whole new life.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, come to the States. You'd fit right in here.
Really? Oh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly right. In the Midwest, you'd fit right in. I think no one's going to question a 5-year-old owning a home on his own and drinking beer.
Oh, I wish I owned. I'm renting this piece of shit.
Well, there's plenty of great places to rent in the Midwest. I'd love to, you know, I'm not, I'd love to tell you about them.
Okay. You got any theme parks?
Oh my God. We got one in Ohio called Cedar Point and it's the best. It's got the Raptor, the Mantis. You're going to love it.
Not interested. I have no capacity for joy. I'd like to go somewhere they don't have any. How about a retirement home? I might be into that. Oh, any with old ladies walking up the stairs that I could just kind of kick one leg aside and who knows, it was an accident. Don't look at me. I'm an innocent 5-year-old. I should be a bank robber.
You know what? Nobody said murder. So yeah, I could probably hook you up with that. And I'm not complicit in this in any way, shape or form.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just a 5-year-old, but this sounds like a foolproof plan.
Well, see, Cabot, things are kind of looking up. You know, we got a plan about some things you could do that could be fun. And we're going to get you out of there. We're going to get you in a whole new place, starting a whole new life.
Okay. Sounds pretty good.
Well, world, keep an eye out for Cabot, Logan. I think you're going to be hearing big things from this kid pretty soon.
Yeah. I mean, it might be I might be making news pretty soon. I don't want to say what it could be, but it'll probably be dark.
Keep your eyes on the paper and your local news for the name Cabot Logan.
Cabot Logan.
Cabot, thank you so much for coming by and enjoy that schlitz.
Hey, man, you got it. I wasn't doing shit.
Thank you so much for listening to My Neighbors Are Dead. I've been your host, Adam Peacock. The show is produced by myself with Nate DeFort and edited by Nate DeFort. Original music was done by Jesse Case, along with Dane Halverson, and our original artwork was done by Mark Nishan. I want to thank Matt Gorley again for coming by and talking kindergarten with Cabot Logan. Again, you can check Matt out as a part of the group Super Ego. You can catch him on Drunk History and on Showtime's Kidding. And his band, Townland, the Townland Band, has a new record coming out later this year. If you want to check them out at Townland Band on social media. He is also a co-host of the podcast Gorley and Rust, so please check that out wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show and you want to support us, please like and subscribe. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can find us on patreon.com at My Neighbors Are Dead. Follow us on Instagram at My Neighbors Are Dead and on Twitter at My Dead Neighbors. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.
it's our old friends, the listeners from My Neighbors Are Dead. Do you guys remember us?
And are you ready for a promo?
Let's do yoga. Let's get fit.
Hi, I'm Nick.
And I'm Uriel.
And we're the hosts of Hella in Your 30s.
This is a podcast for people of all ages, all about navigating this dystopian world we live in.
That's right. So every Monday we invite you into our living room or out into the world on whatever adventures we go on.
Or into our living room for an adventure in our living room.
Yeah, like having your wife challenge you to a Great British Baking Show style competition in your own kitchen.
That's right. Or maybe, you know, you want to know what it's like to volunteer at a food bank.
Or maybe, you want to hear what it's like to foster kittens in the midst of a pandemic.
That's right. Super easy. But giving cats medication is literally the worst thing in the world.
Okay, anyways, if you want to hang out with us, find us every Monday, Hella in Your 30s, wherever you get your podcast.
Bye.
So tomorrow's a new day, let's order pizza.